The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a great Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We have Pedro Gomez rolling in this morning. It is winter baseball meetings, but they're not happening in person. Is there any reason at all to have optimism about the Diamondbacks? Where is Archie Bradley going to sign? The whole business side of baseball, that is with Pedro. And then Michael Fabiano is with Sandy Charles. We'll have Fabs and the fantasy focus as we get into the playoffs. My fantasy team needs a lot of help, but we made it. So there you go. I did watch last night. I'm sure most of you watched last night. What happened with Lamar Jackson? So I want to talk about that as he ran off the field with cramps. There's a really interesting broadcast story today about Nickelodeon and CBS that is one that if I were teaching today at Cronkite, we would probably just throw out everything and just do this one story. Because short of the NFL putting cameras in the womb, this is where we're going with the NFL as they try to get younger and younger and younger and chase audience. So we will get into that. Our television show is on tonight, and it is the National Football Foundation Valley of the Sun chapter All-State team. It is their champions lunch that we are doing virtually. The whole team is involved with it. Jordan and Eric and Sandy and Devin and Ralph Amsden with Arizona Varsity. So happy that Ralph agreed to do one of the awards. And we're going to have some fun tonight. That is on Fox Sports Arizona. It's actually going to stream live here at 6 p.m. tonight. So tonight, if you want to watch it in this day of contracts with YouTube TV and Hulu, and you don't have Fox Sports Arizona, you can find the whole show right here. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. They are all around the valley. It is where Sports 360 AZ does their business. We appreciate Desert Financial Credit Union and their support. So I'm watching the Browns and Ravens last night. I was trying to decompress. We sat here in this studio yesterday, the home studio, for most of the day shooting the NFF show that will air tonight. So I just needed to totally get away, and I found myself enthralled with the game. I don't know about you, but the back and forth of it, like on the surface, Cleveland and the Ravens, yeah, I'm excited to see Lamar Jackson, even though he had COVID and then Baker Mayfield. But I noticed my lens is directed towards how the game is put together. So Lisa Salters is terrific. Lisa Salters does not get enough credit for the role. Most sideline reporters, they just don't give much. They don't, or they're not aware, or teams don't want to help them out. Teams just want everything to be, we'll give you a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and get out of here. For her last night, she spotted what happened with Lamar Jackson, and she carried that story, and she nailed that story, and everybody's wondering where he is, and Lisa was the one. It wasn't the three guys in the booth. Lisa was the one. And by the way, I think the Monday Night Football crew this year, while taking some hits early because it wasn't big name and sexy enough, they're pretty good. Like Brian Griese and Louis Riddick are good together. I don't know if they'd be good with just one guy. And Steve Levy's fine. He's navigating the ship. And they've had great games. Last night, I haven't seen the ratings point yet, but last night's game had me all the way to the end of the two-point conversion, then wondering how much did Vegas take it or how much did some people take it, and the moan and groan on the safety at the end of the game, because that's what matters this day and age in sports. First, it's wins, losses, or is it wins, losses in your pocket because you had money on the game? But that safety, I'm sure there'll be some talk about that. But when Lamar Jackson disappeared, and he went up into the locker room and they called it cramps. And then people afterwards were wanting to talk further about whether he was pooping, whether he was backed up, whatever it was, made for low-hanging fruit on social media. But I wonder, have you ever been in a sporting event? Have you ever been in a sporting event or may have been something like drama or music or whatever, and you're out there and you're performing? And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, no, this isn't good. And I've been there. I had the bucket alongside of me. I did a basketball game in El Paso once, San Diego State against Texas El Paso. And there's no way I should have been on the air. I was so sick, but I was by myself. I was my own engineer. I was my own color analyst. I was a play-by-play guy. And I had something get inside of me. And I had a bucket next to me, and I would just puke during the game. I would turn down. I have a little mixer here next to me. I would turn the volume down like this, and then I'd come right back on the air after I was done going, you know. And it was radio. So, you know, the crowd mic was controlled differently, and I went back and I heard the broadcast, and you couldn't hear me go, ugh! But I'm sure if I had like Al McCoy on today, Al would have some stories too as a Hall of Fame broadcaster where you're trying to perform and you just can't do it. In high school, I was a pretty good basketball player. I was getting recruited and I took a charge in front of a packed gym, and there's some college coaches there, and guy put his knee right between my legs and knocked the air out of me. And I was out for, I don't know, 3 minutes. And they were all laughing. I still remember it. Scarred me. But yeah, so I'm watching Lamar Jackson, the story unfold. It's like, well, I'm sure that people have been in that spot. You probably are nodding your head like, yep, been there. This happened to me. And somehow I made it through, or I didn't make it through, or it didn't have a happy ending to it. The game itself, you just can't. The drama of football, when it's played well, like when you watch September football, I don't know about you, but when I watch September football, it's not very good. When I watch football after about Thanksgiving, man, the NFL after about Thanksgiving, it's really a good product. Because, and it doesn't mean like you don't have the stinkers, like the Giants still aren't good, and the Cardinals had a great performance. In my opinion, the Cardinals had a great win for them on Sunday. But watching like Philadelphia and New Orleans, I watched a lot of that game because I wanted to see Jalen Hurts. It's late in the season. Is this team going to get eliminated or not? September, no training camp, thank God. No worthless preseason games, thank God. Just to go and watch the stuff early in the year wasn't good. Product wasn't good. Product's great. Product's really good. This SpongeBob story. So you're saying he's got SpongeBob in here? Yeah, I've got one of these random shows today. But I saw this story early this morning, and that is CBS Sports and Nickelodeon earlier today are going to put together a kid-focused broadcast on one of the NFL wildcard games. If you're a dad with kids who watch Nickelodeon, then you're probably between the ages of, I don't know, 30, you know, 28 to 35, 40, somewhere in that range, somewhere in that 12-year gap. They're wanting you to sit with your 7-year-old who watches SpongeBob, and you may watch SpongeBob. The game is going to be presented by the SpongeBob Sports Pants Countdown Special, hosted by Von Miller. This is a marketer's dream for former players. Hey, we're going to put you on where there's green slime in the end zones. They're going to have green slime in the end zone, superimposed in. When a player makes a big play, they're going to have cameras where their eyeballs bulge out. So let's say it's last night when Lamar Jackson scores the touchdown and he runs into the camera and his eyeballs will bulge out. It's a cartoon. That's where they're going. So Nickelodeon is going to do this. Noah Eagle, the radio voice, the Clippers, and son of Ian Eagle will do the play-by-play for the Nickelodeon broadcast. Nate Burleson, Lex Lumpkin, a 14-year-old Nickelodeon star, will work as a sideline reporter. You're rolling your eyes on this, but this is the NFL once again saying, short of putting a camera in the womb, we're going after kids. We want the youngest demo possible. It's like the Phil Knight deal with Jordans. If you can get a travel club basketball team together and put them all in Nikes when they're 6, they're probably going to buy them when they're 7, when they're 10, when they're 14, when they're 28, when they have their kids. And the same thing is happening in sports. Nickelodeon's going to put their hand into football. They're going to have a traditional broadcast for those of you that are like, ugh, give me my football. I think this is kind of cool. I think it's very smart. I don't know if it's going to be any good. I don't know if you're making a joke of the game or not, but they're trying to do things. And this will, if the NFL does it, then guess what? The NBA is going to try it. Where did the video game stuff come from? Came from on the field. And then video games came from it. Now video game sales dictate what kids wear and how they act and because they play the games. Now it's this Nickelodeon side of, you know what, we're going to get in on this. And oh, by the way, we're CBS and our contract with the NFL expires next year. And we need to do something, anything to show that we can keep the NFL with us rather than go over to Disney. Because that's going on too. We're going to talk more business of sports and also the Diamondbacks, the offseason, what it's like if you're Pedro Gomez trying to do a virtual hot stove league. Those of you that followed sports for more than a nanosecond know the hot stove league. That is where baseball and deals are put together. I'll have Pedro on the other side and then Michael Fabiano with Sandy on the Fantasy Football Focus at 10:45 on a Tuesday. Stay with us. As promised, Pedro Gomez joins us now, ESPN baseball insider, analyst, reporter based right here in the Valley. You were doing winter baseball meetings. I want to get into the Wahoos. I want to get into all sorts of things, but I wanted to start with virtual winter meetings. How is this working for you?
It is completely different because a lot of the winter meetings are being in the lobby, running into people that you know. And we were supposed to be in Dallas all of last week. And what they did is they pushed the managers, not one-on-ones, the managers group meetings to this week. So it's nothing like what it's been. I know that a lot of times, you know, organizations will say, oh, look, we could just do it this way. I certainly hope that winter meetings do not go the way of virtual, because it really, for a reporter, all you're doing is running into people in the lobby, talking to them while they're there, going out, having breakfast with them, coffee. You know, the bar at night is where all the conversations take place. And that's all gone. None of that happened.
And this is where, for fans that don't really know the pulling the curtain back, an insider like yourself or a reporter like yourself, if you're working on a deep dive, you may get a story that you won't tell for 18 months out of just sitting at a bar with someone for a couple of minutes, right? I mean, this really does impact the ability to do really strong journalism.
It is true. It is. And I realize that the average fan probably would say, well, that makes no sense. Well, a lot of things might not make a lot of sense. But in the world of baseball, the winter meetings was the one time of the year where everybody in the industry got together for that 4 or 5 day period. It didn't matter what organization you were from, what level almost you were at. They all converged at one place, and this is where conversations take place. Story ideas may come up, like you say. You just don't know what can come up from these things. And that's missing. And there's a reason it's called the hot stove league.
Yep.
Because back in the day, it was a way to get baseball on the front pages of the newspaper in the middle of the winter when baseball was dormant. And that was that is the genesis of that term, hot stove league. And there's just none of that this year.
Yeah, no, I remember Trader Jack. You and I both know Jack McKeon.
Yes.
And this is a time of year where if you were a baseball fan, Jack McKeon may say to you, yeah, we're working on something with Philadelphia and the Reds. And yeah, you know, we'll see. And you're set. And the fans are set. The fans were set. You know,
yes.
That's the thing is, there's nothing here to get a Diamondback fan excited right now.
No, very little. I know that a year ago, you know, they made some splashy moves. They got Madison Bumgarner. They got Cole Calhoun. But that's not appearing like anywhere near the horizon for this year's Diamondback Club. And, I think what you saw at the end of last season is probably what you're going to see at the beginning of this coming season.
Okay, so if you're the Diamondbacks and you're Hazen and you're Ken Kendrick and you're Derek Hall – mean, Derek is very savvy about PR around a team. That's just how he is. Ken is sitting up there and everybody's given the, we got to win one for Ken. And you're the general manager and you're like, okay, what budget do I have? How am I supposed to compete with not just the Dodgers, but the Padres have zoomed past the Diamondbacks, in my opinion. So this just looks like something where around June or July, Torrey gets let go or Mike gets let go and they sell everybody off. That's just sitting here in December. That's just how it feels.
Well, because historically that is how clubs operate.
Yeah.
When there is nothing on the horizon, you cannot fire the 26-man roster. You've got to try to shake things up, and the one way to shake things up always has been fire the manager, fire the GM, bring in new blood. I mean, yep. We see it with the Angels. Look, the Angels are on their fourth general manager in the last 11 years. That type of a revolving door is not good for an organization. Meanwhile, with the Yankees, you've got Brian Cashman, who's been there more than 25 years. And things are fairly smooth. I know that it's not fair to compare them with the Diamondbacks because of the money situation, but let's look at John Mozeliak in St. Louis. He's been there for two decades. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of organizations that have had much more of a steady diet in the front office as opposed to these other clubs that seemed like, we got to shake things up. We got to get something done. And really nothing gets done.
Yeah, no. So to the Diamondbacks then, what do you anticipate them doing here in the offseason, if anything? Because the minute Archie Bradley signs, and if he signs in L.A. with the Dodgers, people are going to lose their minds. And I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but I'm playing hot stove league here with you.
Yeah.
Anything from a PR standpoint, what are they looking at doing in terms of players, Pedro? Anything at all you've got for us today?
You know, they're not looking at the top end. They're looking well below to see what they can find underneath the surface. And a lot of times, there's a reason that these type of players are below the surface. Yeah. Now, you might find a diamond in the rough every once in a while. That can happen, but it's not the norm. So I would say if you're a Diamondback fan and you're looking at the Dodgers, who just won the World Series, you're looking at the Padres, who have made incredible strides. Even the Giants have taken some steps upward in this last year. I would say Rockies and Diamondbacks right now are looking at who's going to finish in last, and that's not a fun place to be when you're a fan of a club.
Pedro Gomez with us for a few minutes. The winter baseball meeting's going on. Archie Bradley.
Yep.
I have seen his name attached to the Dodgers. Kenley Jansen's been all over the roadmap. I've seen DJ LeMahieu's name attached to the Dodgers. What are the Dodgers looking at doing?
Well, I mean, Justin Turner's off the books, and that was a hefty amount of money. Kenley Jansen has 1 year left. Clayton Kershaw has 1 year left. They've got a lot of wiggle room. Now, they've got some players they're going to have to sign, like a Cody Bellinger, like a Walker Buehler,
Yeah. Probably
Corey Seager, now that it looks like the injury bug has left him. But there are, there are reasons to believe the Dodgers will continue to spend. They have the money. Archie Bradley, the Astros are looking to bolster their bullpen. So Archie Bradley, I know that maybe his name has not been attached to the Astros, but I could see the Astros making that kind of a move, because they do want to strengthen that bullpen. And they see some openings in the American League West. Oakland is probably on the decline at this point. They've had their run.
Great.
If you just look at them historically, every 3 to 4 years, it's just up, and then it's way down for 4 years. And then it's up for 4 years, and then it's down for three or 4 years. So they look like they're now on the downside. The Astros, you look at the West. Yeah, the West is the Angels are not there. The A's are not there. The Mariners are not there. Help me out. Who am I missing in the West in the American League?
Oh, you went through it.
I thought, and Texas. Texas. Okay. Yeah. So, if you're the Astros, you could look at that division and say, this division is still winnable. We can win this division right now. if we just add a little bit, especially with the success they had in the postseason. I just think that it's Archie Bradley is probably going to sign somewhere, and yeah, Diamondback fans are going to be frustrated over that one.
Yeah, no, that's where we are on this space.
Yeah.
Before I get you out of here, the Cleveland Indians. So when did you first start to see, okay, this is coming, and does the timing of this make sense, and what are they going to do, and the fallout, what happens to the Atlanta Braves? Just walk me through the Indians walking away from the Cleveland, walking away from the nickname Indians.
I would say about 5 years ago when I went to Goodyear one spring, and Chief Wahoo had been replaced by a big block letter C on the front of the building.
Mm.
That's where you kind of said, okay, they really want to get away from that logo. And everything you've seen with the Indians over the last 5 years has been that big block letter C,
yep,
as opposed to Chief Wahoo. So that probably was the beginning of the end at that point. But in reality, the beginning probably occurred 50 years ago when the Stanford Indians became the Stanford Cardinals and then became the Stanford Cardinal. Even before that, the Golden State Warriors used to use a Native American logo, and I think it was in the late 60s, they completely got away from using that logo. Kept the name Warriors, mm-hmm, but got away from the Native American look. The Braves, Chief, what was his name?
I forget.
Oklahoma. The one they used in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And they used to actually have a real teepee out at Fulton County.
I remember that. Yeah. Yeah.
With an actor dressed as a Native American out there. Even in the 80s, the Braves got away from that. But, you know, the Braves have continued to use the chop and everything. So I think that it's just, you know, you see the former Washington Redskins lose the Redskin name. You see it on the landscape, and it was just a matter of time before I think the Indians reached this point.
The Cleveland baseball team?
I doubt it'll be that. They used to be the Spiders a long time ago.
Spiders?
Yeah, the Cleveland Spiders. That was their name originally when they were a charter member of the American League in 1901.
Why the Spiders? They didn't have an exterminator? The Spiders.
I know. They're going to go through a process. They're going to take a year, they've said. They will be the Indians this year only, and that'll be the end of it. There's a lot of people that are upset with that, and there's a lot of people that say, wow, it took this long to get it done.
Yeah.
It's the reality. Just because it's been there forever doesn't mean it was right. And again, this has been going on a long, long time. This isn't just now. The Syracuse University Orange Men are now just the Syracuse University Orange.
Yeah.
This is not some new phenomenon. This has been going on for a few decades now. And it's just time for the Cleveland Baseball Club to move forward.
Okay, I'm going to end this on a kind of a downer heavy note, but I know you're always up for it. And that is this. 2020 has been awful on every front. What is the fallout on baseball? When are fans going to come back? And is this sport in trouble because we've seen the NFL navigate through and rights deals for college are doing this and so on and so forth? So pretty heavy question for you, but is the sport in trouble even more so because of what the pandemic did to it? Or is it fans are going to come back?
Yeah, the sport's not nearly in as much dire shape as, say, the NHL. Because the NHL does not have the TV money that the other three major sports in North America have. The NHL is the one that really is, and I wouldn't say they're teetering by any chance, but they're the ones that are in the most trouble of the major four. Baseball will be fine. Baseball will be fine. I know that the commissioner has said they lost $3 billion last year. So if you look at the year before when they were a almost $12 billion industry, you know, when you run a corporation, you look at that and you say, okay, we'll move it up to 13.5 this year. And if you reach 11, you always tell your people, well, we lost 2.5 million. No, you didn't lose 2.5 million. You just didn't make 13.5.
Right.
You made 12
right.
or 11.
Right.
So yeah, baseball may have only made 9 billion this year, and therefore they can say they lost 3 billion. But the reality is that they're still on solid ground, which is why Trevor May just signed a 2-year, $15 million deal with the Mets, and James McCann signed a 4-year, $40 million deal with the Mets, and Trevor Bauer will sign somewhere. George Springer will sign somewhere. JT Realmuto will sign somewhere. All these players will sign, and the money will not be going down. There is a middle section of players that will see their salaries either remain the same or slightly depressed. But overall, the health of the sport is still okay. That's not to say that if this were to go on for 3 or 4 years, it would be the same. But they're fine. They're fine.
Okay, micro it then. Are the Diamondbacks in good shape?
Well, the Diamondbacks don't have quite the same financial ability that other clubs have. You'd have to say they're on the small to medium market size. But the D-backs still receive a lot of national television money. All the clubs do. You know, I would equate the Diamondbacks kind of with the Kansas City Royals. And the Royals still make money. The Diamondbacks are making money. It's just not as much. So, therefore, they can say we lost money, even though that's not necessarily the case. But, yeah, you know, the game day sales for everybody. Probably hurts the Cubs more than anybody. The day of game sales.
Yeah.
Because they get such a big walk-up crowd. Plus, they own all those bars and restaurants in Wrigleyville. The Ricketts family does. So they make money whether you're in the ballpark or just waiting to go into the ballpark. So the D-backs aren't quite in the same situation. But the D-backs, financially, Major League Baseball is not going to let anybody go down.
That's good. I really appreciate you giving a business to sports side of this, because I get fans that ask, you know, are these guys in trouble? Stay safe. Have fun Zooming with managers and doing your best. See you.
I've got Rocco Baldelli in a little while.
There you go. There's Pedro Gomez with us, and we're back with more after this timeout.
I'm Sandy Charles, and I'm joined by Sports Illustrated's senior fantasy analyst, Michael Fabiano. Michael, let's start in Arizona. Cardinals Dan Arnold worthy of being trusted to start at tight end?
I mean, he's had 3 touchdowns in his last 2 games, but you're down to the final 4 in most leagues right now. You're in the semifinals. I don't think I can trust my playoff livelihood to Dan Arnold. If you are desperate, if you stream tight ends, I mean, in the deepest of leagues, maybe, but there's certainly better options out there.
And we'll get to those in a little bit. This one, can fantasy owners finally start Panthers running back Christian McCaffrey this week?
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't even think the Panthers know at this point, right? If he's ready to roll, they're going to play him. Matt Rule's already said that they're not going to put him on the shelf for the season, but maybe he's not back until week 16. Imagine that. Imagine if you've been holding on to McCaffrey this long and, you know, you've weathered the storm without him. And then in week 16, you get him back. The best running back in fantasy football. You get him back for 1 game and it's your championship. That would be one hell of a Christmas gift. But until he comes back, Mike Davis has been pretty good. And they've got a Saturday game this week. So Green Bay and Carolina play Saturday. So the matchup's pretty good for whoever the running back is. But regardless, they're both starts. McCaffrey, of course, being the much more attractive. If he's active.
Now let's talk about Zeke Elliott. How nervous
let's not.
How nervous should fantasy owners be?
Very.
Yeah.
He stinks. I mean, like, and I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm bitter. I didn't want to win that game last week. I want a high draft pick.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he went into the game with a calf injury, and he split touches with Tony Pollard, and Tony Pollard was better. Like, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I wouldn't be surprised if Pollard ended up being the better of the 2 Cowboys running backs from here on out. I said it a month ago. And would I play Zeke this week against San Francisco? Not if I can help it. No. Their defense is good against running backs. So this is where we're at. And I'm not saying this is all Zeke's fault, but the offensive line is a disaster. You don't have Dak Prescott. It's all gone bad. So if you have depth at running back, or if you can flex a wide receiver and keep Zeke on the bench, I'd do it. I mean, I've been saying that for weeks, outside of last week against Cincinnati, and against the Bengals, he couldn't do anything. So I've been soured on him for weeks.
Let's move it to another running back, Ravens running back, J.K. Dobbins. Will he be freed? When will he be freed?
I mean, he's kind of been, I guess you could say, more free. I mean, I don't know if that makes sense. He's getting more carries. Boy, he played well. He played hard. And what a game that was, by the way, last night. Of course, we're here on Tuesday. That game was just tremendous between Baltimore and Cleveland. And, you know, Dobbins, yeah, he gave you 13 points. He got into the end zone. And I don't know if he's ever going to be like a featured back, like a true featured back. Gus Edwards was really good. You know, I mean, they're not going to, you know, put him on the sidelines if he's running like this. So the good news is that Dobbins played 36 snaps and Gus was second at 15. Mark Ingram's done. He played one snap. He's out of the mix completely. And I like Dobbins. I've liked him all season long. I thought he could be a guy that could help you win a championship. And Baltimore's got Jacksonville coming up and their defense is bad. So Dobbins could be one of those players that helps get you to the finals.
As always, I'm joined by Sports Illustrated senior fantasy analyst, Michael Fabiano. Michael, Washington football team, how should fantasy owners handle their running game?
I know J.D. McKissic was a dud last week. I'd still flex him this week because of the PPR potential. Only if Alex Smith is a play, though. Mm-hmm. Now, Alex Smith missed the second half of that game with a leg injury, but I think he's projected to come back. If Alex Smith is active, I'd still flex McKissic, right? If he's not, Dwayne Haskins is not a guy who likes to check down. So that would hurt McKissic's value to me. So that's sort of which quarterback will you get in Washington. And as for Peyton Barber, he's touchdown dependent. And so this week they've got Seattle. And, I mean, you can run on Seattle a little bit. But, again, I mean, it'd have to be a league where I start multiple flexes. Where Barber's even in the, you know, in the conversation. At this point, again, you're in the semifinals. You probably got a good enough team where you don't have to lean on Peyton Barber.
For those fantasy owners that need a quarterback, how valuable is Jalen Hurts?
I love running quarterbacks. I mean, I've said it a million times. He rushed for, you know, a buck 06, right? He had 106 yards on the ground. He had over 19 points. He got the Cardinals this week. So Kyler Murray against Jalen Hurts, that's going to be fun to watch. But again, like, is he startable in a traditional redraft? Maybe. I mean, most people who are at this point in their playoffs already have a pretty good quarterback, I would assume. Yeah. But Hurts could be very viable in DFS. If you're in a 2QB league, then obviously he's in play, super flex. But running quarterbacks are super valuable. And Hurts didn't do a whole lot through the air, didn't matter. When you can run like he can run, if Philadelphia embraces this kind of offense, then he'll have some value for sure over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, waiver wires. Let's start at quarterback. What are the needs?
So Hurts is probably the top guy. Although Mitchell Trubisky had a good game last week. He got the Vikings this week, right? The Vikings defense is not very good. Tua Tagovailoa had a huge game. I didn't think he'd have that big of a game against Kansas City, but he's got the Patriots this week, so it's not a great matchup. Phillip Rivers, Teddy Bridgewater, Derek Carr, also not widely owned, and all three have potentially good matchups here this week.
Wide receiver, waiver wire needs, what are those?
There's a bunch here. Nelson Agholor, I feel like talk about him every week and nobody picks him up, but whatever. I mean, it's the stink of Nelson Agholor. I have no idea why, but you know, 9 targets or more in 3 of his last 4 games. He's got the Chargers this week. He had 100 yards last week against the Colts, so 21 points. Tim Patrick had a touchdown last week. He's got 3 touchdowns in his last 2 games. He's had 11-plus points in 3 of 4. He's got the Bills this week. Kiki QT, I'm not sure if Brandon Cooks is coming back this week. I would assume he will, but I don't know. But if he's out, I mean, Kiki QT is going to be the number 1 wide receiver for Houston, which is a horrible downgrade for Deshaun Watson. But he's worth an add. Gabriel Davis, although John Brown could be back soon, so keep tabs on John Brown's status in Buffalo. Rashard Higgins, KJ Hamler, Russell Gage, Keelan Cole also have varying degrees of value off the waiver wire this week.
Running back waiver wire needs.
It's weak. Mm. So if you're in a non-competitive league, number one, shame on you. Number two, Cam Akers might be out there, maybe, but he's gone in most leagues. If he's out there somehow, get him. He's got the Jets this week. They're terrible. Lynn Bowden, now he's running back eligible on some platforms. He's wide receiver eligible on other platforms. And I believe ESPN has him as a running back wide receiver. Now, if Miami's down, Matt Breida, Salvan Ahmed, and Miles Gaskin again, well, then I think Bowden's worth a look as a flex. I mean, he played 59 snaps last week. He's got 13 targets in the last two games. Devontae Parker's dealing with an injury too. So, I mean, he's in the mix as a potential flex starter. Jeff Wilson Jr. Now, I love Raheem Mostert this week, but he's banged up. And if Mostert can't go, Jeff Wilson becomes a really good play against the Cowboys. And then speaking of the Cowboys, Tony Pollard. As I mentioned, Sandy, there's not much at running back right now.
Tight end, like we said, we're going to circle back to it. So tight end, waiver wire needs.
Yeah, not much here. Logan Thomas has had 16 targets in the last two games, which is great. Seattle's really tough on tight ends this year, though. So he's probably a low-end tight end one if you need one. Irv Smith Jr. had four targets last week. He got the Bears this week, so it's a good matchup. But he's only an option if Kyle Rudolph doesn't go again. Tyler Higbee's been bad most of the year. He's got the Jets this week. If you're desperate for a tight end, the Jets have given up the most points to tight ends. So Higbee could be out there on the waiver wire, maybe Gerald Everett as well. And then you mentioned Dan Arnold. But again, if I'm in DFS, okay, maybe, because he's going to be reasonably priced. But otherwise, I'm not playing Dan Arnold in the fantasy playoffs. Just can't do it. Can't do it. Can't go there.
Can't trust him enough?
Can't trust him. Nope, can't do it. I sound like Mike Singletary right now. Can't trust him. Can't win with him. Can't do it.
Last waiver wire thoughts before your last overall thoughts. What are your waiver wire thoughts?
Don't get cute with the waiver wire, right? Like, I get it. Like, there's some players out there that should be rostered. It doesn't mean you necessarily have to play them. You're in the semifinals. Dance with the partner that got you there, right? Play your studs. So are you going to play the matchups? I mean, sure. But at this point, in most competitive leagues, there's just not much on the waiver wire. There just really isn't. So like at quarterback, right? Unless you're in a 2QB league, you're probably not playing Jalen Hurts or Mitchell Trubisky, right? Or Tua Tagovailoa. You're just not. Because you've already set it quarterback. So don't get too cute as it pertains to the players you pick up off the wire.
And last, fantasy football thoughts. What are they? What do the owners need to know?
Well, again, don't get cute this week. And, you know, dance with the partners who brung you there. So I will say this. Quarterback, you've got a lot of really good options. I think you can still play the matchups there. Obviously, the obvious starts are the obvious starts. But for me, it's a situation where I would hate – to get cute with a player and sit a more reliable player. Like a lot of people say, for example, maybe looking at, I don't know, Tom Brady this week and thinking maybe I'll play Tua or maybe I'll play Jalen Hurts or maybe I'll play Trubisky. It might work out, but Brady's got Atlanta this week. Right. And Brady wasn't that great last week. He's been up and down all season long. I would rather go with the more reliable players, the players with the better resume, the players with the better track record. And of course you're going to play the matchups there too, but I try not to get too cute. I say that a million times. I just try not to get too cute when it comes to the playoffs. Maybe I'll throw a guy in there who's got a high ceiling if the rest of my roster is pretty stacked and most of those guys have good floors, but it's all about roster construction. And at this point you want to play your best guys. I'd rather go out there and play my best dudes and lose with them than try and get cute with a player who may or may not put up a good number. And then I sit a stud and the stud goes off and the player that I got cute with didn't help me. I'd feel terrible about that.
Awesome, Michael. Thank you so much. As always, Michael Fabiano. I'm Sandy Charles and we'll see you next week.